It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Hey, everybody, it's Mark Yeagy. Welcome to another edition and episode of the Wealth Architect Podcast. I am so glad you're here. Today, we have a really interesting twist on what we normally do here. And I'm excited about this because I kind of fall into this category. I don't like the whole labeling thing of everybody, but this one helps people kind of understand people a little bit better. It's called Highly Sensitive Person, HSP. And the guest we have on today is an HSP love and marriage coach, and she's the host of the Highly Sensitive, Happily Married podcast. Through her coaching programs and courses, she helps sensitive women put an end to disconnection in their marriage and create a supportive, loving, and light and connected relationship that they really want to have with their significant other. Let's welcome Hannah Brooks. Hi, Hannah. So glad you're here today.
Hello, Mark. It's wonderful and an honor to be here having this talk with you.
Yeah, this is good. This is cool. So let's kind of introduce my listeners and viewers to the concept of a highly sensitive person. And maybe if you're listening, you can kind of maybe identify yourself in this or know somebody who is. Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah. So you may or may not have heard the term highly sensitive person. It's become rather more well known over the last 5 years or so. But actually, amazingly, 20 to 30% of people are actually highly sensitive.
Is it that high? Wow.
It's that high. And it's not just humans. It's other species as well. So it's like a nature selected for this. There's a reason, it's a beneficial trait for the human, for the survival of the human species, right? And so highly sensitive, it really just means we have a more finely tuned nervous system, which processes stimuli and like information a lot, well, more deeply than non-highly sensitive nervous systems. So that has a profound effect on our lives across the board, right?
Yeah. I find myself in this category, and I read a book based on your suggestion, and that really opened my eyes. Like, does this fall into the category? Like, it drives me crazy when people's dogs bark.
Yeah.
When there's a jet flying overhead, I can't really focus on the conversation, things like that. Is that kind of what we're talking about here?
Yeah. So it's both in things like that, like sensory processing, right? That can be intense for us, right? Smells, we can, like the super smellers, those are highly sensitive people, or HSPs. The super hearers, or those of us who are bothered by noise and get distracted by it, just like you said. Lights, right? Bright lights can be really affecting. But there's also the whole realm of emotional processing. And it's the same thing. It's like, if you think of like a bright light affecting us deeply, or a noise affecting you deeply, it's the same with our emotions. Our emotions affect us deeply, right? And we feel deeply.
Yeah. And that makes sense, because if you're emotionally affected, well, I always say, we make terrible decisions when we're emotional. So if we are sensitive and it creates emotions, then it creates maybe sometimes poor decisions. So how can we take this status, this label, and turn it into a positive? I don't like to just focus on the negative, and I know you don't either. So this is something that we could turn into a positive. How?
What a great question. And it's a big question. So, my focus on how to turn this into a positive, which I absolutely believe it is. I mean, there's so many gifts to it, right? Let's just slow down and think about, like, because we feel deeply, because we experience things deeply, for example, something as simple as a sunset can be profoundly moving and profoundly nourishing, right? So I think it's like, in the most general sense, it's leaning into the gifts that it offers, which is a whole slew, and learning how to kind of work with and honor and manage the more challenging aspects of the trait. I find particularly the emotional piece is the one that, at least with the people that I work with, is the most challenging. For the one thing that's really beautiful about our trait is that we tend to be very creative. Yeah. And we also tend to be very, just very oriented around relationship. And I think all humans are relational creatures. Like, that's nourishing for us to have good relationships. And that's part of what I want to share today. But For highly sensitive people, we have more sensitive mirror neurons, so we're able to pick up on other people and like almost read them really well. So we can be really attuned to other people. And in many ways, a lot of what's going on in our nervous system and brain is just really oriented around other human beings and having really great relationships. And so to me, that's, again, because this is the focus of my work, is to me, that's huge. And I really think we're born for the best relationships possible as highly sensitive people, because we come into this world like oriented around it and with these little gifts that amplify and make our relationships great when we know how to work with the harder parts of our trait, right? That's the, it's kind of catch 22, is we have these other aspects that can just, like you said, like the sort of the overstimulation, or when something is hard in our relationship or just hard in our life, like we're going to be feeling that deeply, and it's going to potentially be challenging and impactful in a not so great way on a relationship. So I think when I say highly sensitive people are born for the best relationships possible, that's absolutely true. But the key is learning how to work with those parts of our traits, our trait that can make it, that can make relationships harder than normal if we don't know how to work with them.
I mean, I have to ask the natural question, and that is, you say highly sensitive people are born for great relationships. What about everybody else?
We all are. I do. I really do think we all are. Like I said,
Right.
like we're relational creatures. We're born to be in relationship with others and in great ways, right? I just think that there's like, it's almost like an extra little superpower that highly sensitive people have that can make it even more of a focus for us, but also just sort of naturally more rich and juicy and connected and
You
all
know,
that.
it's amazing as we're talking. I mean, I find myself resonating with so much of what you say. And I just happen to hear through what you're saying, a concept called sensory acuity. And it's something that I heard from Tony Robbins 25 years ago. And it's so funny because there's a saying, and I'm going to go around this whole thing, you know, common sense is so uncommon. Why do they call it common sense, right? And sensory acuity, I find, is very rare, and is not, maybe not very rare, but it's pretty rare. Like I'll find that there are people that just come up and start talking to other people, maybe me, for example, and they're not interested in what they have to say, and they don't care. They just keep talking, 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 talking. You probably know some of these people, and if you're listening and watching, you probably know some of these people. And how can people? I think maybe HSPs have that superpower to have highly, you know, that high sensory acuity. So that they understand if somebody's not listening to them, or they understand if somebody's not interested in what they want to say, or you know, they just are attuned to their audience, right? For lack of a better term. So how do we, if we're not highly sensitive, right? How do we take those cool things, those, for example, sensory acuity or common sense even, how do we take those and incorporate them into our lives so we can have that sensory, that superpower as well? I know that's a long question.
It's not actually a question I've thought about, because I tend not to think as much about non-highly sensitive people. But off the top of my head, I mean, the word sensitivity
Yeah.
is the key, right? It's like you use the word attuned, and like HSPs naturally are attuned and are sensitive to and read cues, etc. So I think, you know, we could take a trick from the HSP playbook if we're not highly sensitive, and just intentionally, consciously sort of slow ourselves down a little bit and choose more sensitivity, meaning more like anyone can be mindful, right? Like that's another word we could use, mindful, mindfulness. Like if we're in a conversation with someone, that would be about, you know, actively, if this doesn't come natural to us, like actively being present with the other person. Right? Actively noticing their facial expressions. Because we all can pick up on other people's cues. Sometimes it's that we're just distracted, or we're not really present, right? So I think in the sort of most general sense, that's the ticket for someone who isn't highly sensitive, to just slow down and be super present with and be curious about the other person. And you're gonna have great capacity for reading their cues and
So it's probably creating, from what I'm hearing you say, and I think I agree with you, is creating the habit of focus,
Yeah.
creating the habit of wanting, of human relations, right? Wanting to care about the other person, remembering that other person's interest is to them, paramount, right? And the same thing with the name, and the same thing with what they're doing in their life, and really taking an interest. Isn't that kind of the what we're saying?
100%. And I think the other reason why it comes more naturally to highly sensitive people is there's this interesting piece of the trait, this tendency within highly sensitive people to be extra specially conscientious and compassionate. And so that sort of drives us to want to be extra attentive, extra present, right, with the person we're talking with.
So in your work, you deal with a lot of people who have emotional poverty. I think that's a term that you kind of throw around, and it's probably based on a lot of experience. What is that? Can you define that for us? And how do we turn that into a positive, right? Because emotional poverty doesn't sound like a positive. How can we turn that into a positive? And what kind of keys do we have to do that?
Okay, so I think to sort of understand the term emotional poverty, I think the issue is we live in a society, right, where a lot of what's the word? Like other things, material goods, tangible things are accumulating wealth, focusing on our career, like all these things are emphasized, let's say that, right?
The
And
Western stuff, I call it.
what's that?
The Western stuff, the wealth,
The Western
the
stuff. Yeah, the
consumption, the
Western stuff.
stuff, right? Not the
Western.
experience, the people, and the magic moments.
And none of that is wrong or bad. It's just, I think the scale gets tilted, right? Because there's like physical wealth, we could call it, or the Western stuff. And then there's the emotional wealth. And I think what happens is we accidentally, because of our societal sort of push or values, focus on the Western stuff, the material wealth, at the expense of the emotional wealth. And that leaves us sometimes emotionally impoverished, right? Because we spend our whole lives chasing the great career, focusing on accumulating wealth, doing all the things. Like there's all sorts of things that we do, like the fancy cars that we buy, right? Again, none of that's wrong, but if we're not also paying attention to our emotional wealth, then we are going to end up really in a state of emotional poverty, where we don't feel fulfilled, where we don't feel a lot of meaning, where we don't feel happy and connected and nourished by our lives, right? And yeah, I think it's just so easy to do. And like I have an example, for example, some of my older clients have come to me while they're retired or right before they're about to be retired, and they're like, "Oh no, I just realized, like, I've been my whole life working really hard, so did my husband, and focusing on the Western things and raising kids, right? We forgot to pay attention to our relationship. And I'm really like, we wanted a great retirement, but now we're miserable together, right? We're so unhappy. How can we be with each other for the rest of our lives, right?"
Now, what do you do for that?
Well, I teach them emotional wealth and how to create it ultimately, and relational wealth. And I want to say, like, I oftentimes use those two terms interchangeably because for me, relational wealth is emotional wealth, and it's like they're intertwined. They're not the same, but they're very much intertwined. So I help them take the shortcut in life, which is instead of trying to get happy through, climbing the career ladder or whatever that, I mean, only climbing the career ladder, right? I help them go directly to the source of our actual true happiness and build that emotional wealth and that relational wealth. That's one way of putting it,
Well, I
anyway.
mean, that's, I think that's so well put. It's beautiful, actually. It reminds me of a story. A few years ago, I went on a trip with a bunch of other millionaire guys, right? And millionaire guys, you would just imagine, you go to a different country in Europe, right? You take them away from their indigenous environment, right? And what do you think guys talk about that are millionaire guys? You know, what would you think they would talk about, Anna?
All I can think about is cars for some reason.
Yeah, right. I mean, they talk about cars. They talk about their next business deal. They
Yeah,
talk
yeah.
about all those things. And all those things is what pops into our mind when I say millionaire guys. But you know what I noticed is we went on this trip. And yeah, there was a bunch of that. What deals are you working on? How many apartments do you have? Are you doing a cash out refinance? All the things we talk about on this podcast. And then after the second day, when we really got to know each other, the conversation shifted. And it was all about relationships from that point on. And you realized that there was a lot of pain in these millionaire guys' relationships. The people that you look at and go, wow, they got it all. They got the sports cars and the really big houses and the trophy wife or whatever. And it doesn't have to be any of that, but that's what you kind of put in as a stereotype. And you say, well, they're killing it. They're making $1 million a year. They got $20 million net worth. And then you realize they would give that all up to have a high quality relationship. And so, you know, I keep finding that out. I keep learning this lesson that, you know, in life, it's not all about the stuff. It's about the experiences. It's about the people. And I think that's what you're talking about here, right?
Absolutely.
Hey, it's Mark Yeager here to tell you about our Cash Flow Machine trading program that's designed to teach you how to make safe, reliable income. Now, we shoot for 2 to 4% a month of income and growth in your portfolio. And we have courses to teach you how to do this yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part of that is it only takes about 20 minutes a week to implement. Now, while 2 to 4% a month doesn't sound like much, I show you exactly how we took my IRA from $111,000 to over $500,000 in just 19 months without huge risk. I'm not telling you this to brag, just to show you that you could do this too. So to learn more about this program, go to cashflowmachine.io. That's cashflowmachine.io, and you can learn more.
And again, like, it's so easy for people to get caught up in building these big businesses and careers and doing these big deals, right? Like, because that has been highlighted as the path to happiness, right?
Sure.
But it's this, your story illustrates so beautifully, is like, you can have all of that and be really unhappy, right? And I think that that's the almost the disease that our culture has, that we don't value consciously. We don't value consciously the relationships and the real things, the connections in life, right? And when we don't value it consciously, we don't necessarily put intentional focus and effort and learning into that. Like these guys you're talking about, I'm sure they spend lots of energy learning how to be good at business, right?
Yeah.
But how much energy do they put learning how to be good at relationship?
Yeah, for sure.
And it's not like they personally are the only ones that made a mistake. It's like our culture has pushed us to make that mistake over and over to the detriment of our marriages. Like if you look at the divorce rate, it's 50% or so, right? And to me, that isn't because people aren't compatible or we can't have, like, it's not easy to, I mean, yeah, it's challenging to have good relationships, but I think the bigger problem is that we haven't figured out that the way to have great relationships is to put intentional effort into it, which means choosing that, which means valuing that consciously, if that makes sense.
It does, and it brings up a point. What do you think of this? I read this yesterday on X, and that was that it ranked all of the countries that have divorce rates. And our country is, you know, the US, the West is, you know, in the higher end, 50, 60%, something like that. And India was at 3. Now I know, and I'm just, my silly, you know, Western brain knows that in India, they have a lot of arranged marriages. And
yeah.
I'm curious to see what your opinion is about A, arranged marriages, B, the Eastern culture, and why they have, I would call that a 97%, you know, marriage rate is not a 3% divorce rate is the negative way to look at it. A 97% success rate.
Yeah.
It's a better way to look at it versus our 50-50. What do you think they're doing differently over there?
Yeah, I think it's all about their values. And I honestly don't know if they're happier in their marriages, right? So, I mean, that's, I don't know that the primary values of Indian people or Eastern cultures is as much happiness, right? Pursuit of happiness. But So I do think a lot of it's expectations, cultural beliefs. But one thing that's interesting, actually, one of my dearest, dearest friends was born in India, and we used to have in college, we used to have a lot of conversations about what is like arranged marriage thing, like, because I didn't understand it at all. But through conversation with her, I started to really understand. I think the difference there is they don't go in expecting romantic love and total fulfillment, right? They don't expect the other person to provide that for them. And so they learn how to love the person. They learn how to work with the person. I mean, I can't say some people, I know that some arranged marriages, there is not love. But for a lot of arranged marriages, those people grow love for the other person. And so I think there's more of an impetus to stay in that marriage and to make it work versus I think that sort of confusion that some of us have in the West, which is that the marriage needs to make me happy instead of I need to learn how to be happy in the marriage and work for the happiness of the marriage.
Yeah, I heard a long time ago, it's 1 + 1 = 11, not 1 + 1 = 2. Part of that is it's not a relationship isn't a 50-50 deal. It's not I put in 50 and you put in 50. No, it's each person puts in 100 and you may get the 50 and meet in the middle. But if you're not putting in the 100, then the most you can get is 50. And so on those days where you're only putting in 40, you've got that chasm in the middle. So I mean, I could talk about relationships for a long time. Go ahead. Do you have a thought on that?
Well, yeah, I did have a thought, which is that this one might sound kind of radical, but it just like with the arranged marriages, I do think I don't put in 100% just for you, and you don't put in 100% just for me. I put in 100% to help meet my own emotional needs, and you put in 100% for you to help meet your emotional needs. And then we come together from a more fully emotionally well place and we love and enjoy each other. So it's not so much that the marriage, I mean, I think in an ideal marriage, it's not so much that we're just sort of demanding that the other person meet our emotional needs. We're learning how to what I call insource a lot of that. And that's part of this emotional wealth piece, learning how to do that. I call it emotional agency. We learn how to support our own emotions really, really well and kind of guide our emotions. We're going to be able to show up in our relationships in such a stronger, more secure, loving, light, fun place where it's so much easier to be kind of in an emotionally mature, rich, fun relationship from there.
That's beautiful. That's ideal, actually. Do you help non-HSPs?
I do. I like to think of the people that I help as being kind of big-hearted and have big emotions so that they resonate, like, because that's a lot of the work that I do, or like be oriented a little bit around, like being interested in some of what I'm talking about, right? So I absolutely have worked with lots of people who are like, some of the qualities of highly sensitive sort of sounds a little bit like me, but not 100%. That's cool. If you resonate with me and what I'm saying, I'm happy to work with you.
That makes sense. So listen, how can I know we could talk about relationships for hours and hours because they are the stuff of life and the beautiful stuff of life when you have great ones. But let's talk about you for a second. You have a podcast and you also have like a quiz that people can take if they want to just find out a little bit more about this interesting and kind of newly discovered subject. Tell us a little bit about that.
That quiz. So one of the things that, let's see, how do I want to say this? One of the things that is like maybe one of my biggest relationship pieces of advice, just to kind of introduce the quiz this way, is that to have a great one, we each, just like we were talking about, need to be willing to look at our own selves and what we bring to the relationship and how we show up in the relationship. We call it like staying on your side of the court, right? If a marriage is like two people on a court and they're like playing ball together, right? Playing tennis, then your job is always going to be to stay on your side of the court and do what's on your side of the court to relate to be well in yourself and relate to your partner well. Right. But I think the mistake that we so often make is we try to like jump over the side of the court, or like we get mad at the way the other person is doing it over on their side of the court, or we like want to get over there and show them how to hit the ball. If this makes sense. Right. And so, really, one of the first keys to having a great relationship is to be willing to look at your own side of the court and do all that you can do on your side of the court to be well in yourself, and because that matters so much in your relationship, like it has a profound effect on your relationship, and then relate well, right? So I would call that just like self-awareness and self-ownership, and ultimately like the willingness to, instead of blaming, which is so easy to do, responsibility for all that you can, which is so much more than most people think. Like there's so much on our own side of the court that impacts the relationship either detrimentally or positively. So that being said, I made a quiz to help people identify the area that they personally would most benefit from focusing on their side of the court to improve their marriage, to improve their relationship. So, it gives you, there's three quiz results, and because I boiled it all down to like three primary things that are like the most important for people to learn how to do in their relationships. And so this quiz identifies that for people. And I think it's quick, it's fun. It's called, the quiz is kind of a mouthful. It's called, I Want a More Loving, Connected Marriage. Where Do I Start? But really, it's about where do you focus for the most impact at first?
I love it. Well, I love I'm going to link to that in the show notes, and hopefully people will try that quiz, because I can tell you that my eyes opened when I found out a little bit more about this topic, and you are certainly a great ambassador for it. And I want to thank you for your message getting out to people, because I think relationships are, as you've said, incredibly important. It's the stuff of life. It's the stuff of a great life, and so we need to focus on some really good ones. And you're helping that movement. So thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you so much, Mark. And thank you for having me. It's been really fun.
Thank you for appearing on the Wealth Architect podcast, and all of you listening and watching, thank you for tuning in. And as I always say, never give up your power in your health, your wealth, or your time. Have a great day, everybody. See you next time.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.